I know.
Okay. Welcome back to the From the Fabricator podcast. The February edition is live, and thank you for joining me. Got a great show ahead for you today. And before we get into that, this month's edition of the From the Fabricator podcast is brought to you by MyGlassClass.com. It is the ultimate destination for the glass and glazing training world. So anywhere you want to get that training done, go visit MyGlassClass.com. See the range of classes, ease of use, more than 100 courses available, new ones always being added, and there's 60 of them also available in Spanish. On-demand training, 24/7. It's easy to get your folks trained. I'm a big believer in MyGlassClass.com. National Glass Association brought together some of the best experts in the world to put this thing together, and that's why it's worth it, and that's why it is the best training for the glass and glazing professional in our industry. Check it out today. If you have any questions, feel free to hit me up or reach out to anybody at the National Glass Association or at MyGlassClass.com. Thank you to them for the support of this podcast. So let's get going into that. We got a good show today. I'm excited. Before we welcome in our guests, real quick note, BEC is coming in March. Registration is open. If you have not registered yet, if you've not gotten your hotel room yet, get it now. The roster is filling up. You want to be there. It is the ultimate spring event for the glass and glazer. So it's where the best glazers in the country, the best glass shops in the country attend. That all obviously attracts the best suppliers in the country to attend. The agenda is fabulous. The people that are speaking are absolutely off the charts. Wonderful. This is a really good event. It is coming March 5th, 6th, and 7th in Las Vegas. Go to glass.org and look at the events tab, hit on BEC, and sign up today. All right, let's get into the podcast. Three sets of guests. Kick it off with Katie Devlin of Glass Magazine. She is a longtime player in this world. She's seen a lot. She's fantastic. Great talk with her. Then we move to three people trying to get something going good for our world. Christy Rayberger, Nathan Seaman, Adam Posick. They're trying to get the California Glass Association off the ground, and they're doing a great job. It's a really important group for the state of California. So if you're in the state of California, you want to listen to that section, you want to talk to these folks, and you want to get involved, good insight there. And then we end it with recurring guest Nick St. Denis from KMR, talking forecast, talking insight with what is going on in our world. He does that Glass and Glazing quarterly event newsletter. You want to hear what his thoughts were, both last year's thoughts and what's going forward this year. But we kick it off with Katie. Here we go. Okay. To kick things off this month, I'm thrilled. This is a person that I've always wanted on, and I was just kind of, you know, waiting and pointing to the right time. But I've got Katie Devlin, who has a great new title because she's awesome. She is the content director at the National Glass Association, also the editor-in-chief of Glass Magazine. You've seen her for a lot of years, and you know she is the force in our world. Katie, thank you so much for joining me on my podcast.
Oh, thank you, Max. And I actually, you know, I've just been crossing my fingers for years, hoping that one day I'd get the call. So thanks for having me.
I needed to be ready for this because you're one of my all-time favorites. And what really, you know, a question that's coming up is what really spurred, because I can't wait to ask it to you, that your appearance in New York. Was like, I got to get her on just to talk about that. But before we start, you can find Katie's work, glassmagazine.com, glass.org, Glass Magazine Weekly, obviously all of those things online. And also, you know, obviously the Glass Magazine, you can get the print edition. So subscribe to all of that. So let's get going, Katie. You know, it's interesting. You've been around a long time. You don't look like you've been around a long time because you have incredible genes working in your favor. But I'm curious. The one thing I don't think I ever got with you, and this has become almost like a continuing theme for me on these podcasts, and part of it is, I guess, my tunnel vision of like always focused on the industry and the now. Where'd you come from? How did you get here?
Well, that's a great place to start. Well, I am a fellow Midwesterner. I grew up, right in Minnesota. So I was made for the glass industry. I didn't know it at the time. But I studied journalism, so I went to University of Maryland. I just kind of wanted something new. They
Wow,
had
okay.
they have a terrific J school there. I always wanted to be a newspaper reporter. That was my, that was my jam. My senior year, between junior and senior year, I had an internship at Worthington Daily Globe. It's this tiny little paper in Southwest Minnesota. I was going to rodeos and town hall meetings and like reporting on livestock trucks that have tipped over. I was really getting out in the field, and I thought, I'm not sure if this is right for me.
Okay. Yeah.
And so I was looking for an internship for the year, something in DC, and up came Blast Magazine. It's like,
Wow. Wow.
let's haven't done any magazine work. The hours seem right. It seems like a new adventure. It's something I can do as I close out my year. So I am the longest running intern at the National Glass Association, I guess.
That's fantastic. So you start. I did not realize that you came on as an
Yeah.
intern, and obviously covering the work in Worthington was not Woodward and Bernstein-esque like you probably hoped.
No, yeah, it definitely was sort of the reality. And so that was 2004, 2005.
Okay.
And for, anybody who reads newspaper, you sort of recall that that was right when all the papers were beginning to collapse. And I read the writing on the wall, and I feel,
Smart.
so grateful that I landed at a trade magazine, particularly at this association, and in this industry. Because I think, glasses, we will continue to talk about for the next hour, but what a wonderful group of people, what a great material, what a like really a business I think we can feel pretty good about, and what we're doing for the world. So yeah, so I feel very lucky to have sort of stumbled upon that internship posting way back
Wow.
when.
Wow. And so you just climbed the ladder internally, at National Glass Association and at Glass Magazine. So you've seen, I mean, you've seen it. You've seen it all. And I've been with you at many glass builds, at Glass Tech in Germany. I mean, so it's been a heck of a run. It's amazing. So what is that? That's what, 18 years, 19 years?
Yeah, 18, I think 18 years.
Wow.
And really, Max, you were one of my first interviews, I think. The first events I went to were at the then Ghana. I was at that 2005 BEC,
Gotcha.
and you were so involved way back then. And you told me once, probably in my first couple of years, you said, if you are in the industry 5 years, you will never leave. And I was like, all right. Sure.
It's true. Once you get in, you rarely get out, especially if you start to stay and you find how much you fit in with all of us crazy folk.
Yeah.
And you definitely do. I bet you if most people probably think you came from a family glass business because you've dove in so deep and so much. The knowledge that you've brought to the table is incredible. And so definitely more than just a writer at the beginning and then growing and now, definitely more than just a content director or editor in chief. You really live this industry, which is impressive to me.
Well, thank you. I mean, it's a really great community, and I think it's full of people who really love what they do, which makes it, in a lot of ways, pretty easy for a new person to come in. That's not the way it is in a lot of businesses, in a lot of industries, but I think we are building phenomenal projects. We are making a material that I think folks are really proud of, and they want to share that. So we have, some new editors that have come on, and they Rachel and Tara, I hope folks meet them at the shows, but they're just terrific new faces at the magazine. But they attended Glassbuild, and every single booth they stopped at, folks are they want to take the time and show off who we are and what we do. So
Yeah,
that's
and that made my actually it was funny that made my heart swell because I caught up with Rachel during Glassbuild. I said, "How's it going?" And she was trying to catch her breath because it's just so intense when you're new and it's big and you don't know what to expect. But she said, "Everybody's so nice. you know, and everybody was so welcoming. And I'm like, you know what, that's our world. I mean, we, you know, we go hard and, you know, they're, you know, not everybody's perfect, but it was just so nice that everybody was so welcoming to a new person, you know, took their time, educated her. And, that really made my day. So that was cool. And we have a good place.
That's really good to hear.
Yeah, it's a good deal. So really, okay. So you and I we've known each other a long time. You've been, you know, battling the battles. What do you think some of the biggest changes are from when you started, you know, getting and going? And I know at BEC, you're going to talk a little bit about the past 25 years, but for you personally and so on, what are some of the biggest changes you've seen in our space in your career here?
Yeah. So I divided this one. I think I'm going to divide this into factory and field.
Okay.
Both have changed pretty dramatically. So thinking about the factory, the fabricators in particular, I think there have been two that I've really seen. And one is automation.
Yeah.
And I was just chatting with Anne Greco over at Salem about some of the, you know, the automated innovations that they've seen over the past decade. And I was recalling the first time they brought an articulating robot to Glassfield. And I was trying to place that in time. Because it made such a splash, you know, everybody was around that booth, and we hadn't really we'd seen those in LCD manufacture and all of these related industries, but suddenly they were in our world, and she was reminding me. So they started working on that in 2014, and now, you know, seeing those automated solutions, seeing those robotics, I mean, it's all over the show floor. So I think has been a huge and pretty rapid area of advancement. And a lot of that, you know, is because of labor. You know, I think fabricators are having a hard time finding folks. But also the glass is just getting bigger. So that brings us to the field side. You know, what is changing in the field? I mean, the installs of today are not the installs of the last generation whatsoever. Glass is so large, it is getting larger. You do have to wonder if we're reaching a point where it can't get any larger. It's, you know, how do you get it? What's the maximum? Is it the shipping containers? Is it the truck that it goes on? But, you know, the manufacturers can keep making it bigger.
Yeah, it's amazing. Absolutely.
Yeah. So you know, but the field side, obviously oversized. That's a big one, these large lights, but unitized, a lot of prefab. I think our glazers are just completing more sophisticated installations right now. And the skylines of every city look different because of what we do.
Yeah, no doubt. And it's funny, you figure back in, you know, 2005, you know, we were still pushing hard for people to utilize low E. And now, you know, everyone does that. It's an automatic, and now it's, you know, how intense can I get that performance on my unit? And then can I, you know, add something like electrochromic or photovoltaic or, you know, VIG and things like that, that are really starting to emerge and disrupt. And so, you add that on top of the fact that you're right. I mean, it's getting bigger and bigger and bigger because natural light rules. So, and we're the perfect product for that. So I like that. And then on the plant side, you're dead on. I remember when Dan Reinhart, you know, showed me that robot, and it was amazing to see because it was the first time we had seen a robot pick up a piece of glass, move it and put it on another rack. And it was like, all right, we're there. And I think we just as an industry have to keep going that way because you're just not going to find the people. And I think, you know, that you're running into that all the time, probably talking to people.
Yeah, for sure. I'm glad you mentioned performance because I think that is probably this massive overarching trend that has been happening for decades. But there is just a you know, this is being pushed by our energy codes. It's being pushed by these individual jurisdictions, by our owners, by the architects. The industry has really stepped up and trying to make products that are performing in ways that would have seemed unachievable, you know, 18 years ago.
Oh, yeah, because I do think when you started, and we're talking about that 2004 to 2006 timeframe, you know, people were scared of some of the new low E's because they couldn't handle them, they couldn't run them. There was question on how they would hold up in the field. Failure of units and so on and so forth. So it took a little bit of learning, but now, I mean, people are just going crazy, which is good. We need that. We need as much performance as possible to stay ahead of the rest. So very cool. Absolutely. Very cool. Well, that kind of leads nicely into, we just finished celebrating the International Year of Glass, which kind of flew by, if you ask me. I mean, it flew by. There were a lot of great events, and it ended with a final closing at the United Nations in New York. And you were one of the key moderators, and you were the one that was dropping the quote-worthy quotes all over the place. And so a couple questions. One, how nervous were you? Because you see this thing on TV for your entire life, and walking in there and being on that same stage that world leaders, good and bad, have stood on, and you're on that, same or similar stage, the nerves, I'm curious how they were. And B, how did it all go? How do you think it all turned out?
It was amazing, Max. I think it was one of those moments where we walked into the conference room. I mean, just coming into the UN is a bit of a to-do. There's so much security that you go through. You're showing passports, you're going through metal. Like, there's just a lot just to get in the space, and then you walk in, and it's kind of this labyrinth of hallways, and we're trying to find our way there, and we finally reached the space. The doors open up, and it was every single person who came in from our side just had to pause and take a photo. Bunch of glass folks taking selfies over this 500 or 600 person conference room. But it was pretty amazing. So they had us up at the this front desk, looking out. There are about 7-8 seats on this front desk. Every seat has the microphone and the little screen so you can see your presentation, the little ear thing for the translators. I had the gavel in front of me. I felt very powerful.
Love it. Love it.
And then up to my right, we had all of the rooms for the interpreters, and they did not have folks on hand to interpret, which I get, but it still was pretty to see that. And then looking out and seeing all folks from our industry, not architectural. We had a good attendance from the architectural side, but it was a lot of folks from academia who work in the material science of glass. A big representation from the art glass side, all kind of coming together for this. So I don't think I've ever been more excited to be part of the glass industry.
That's awesome. That's awesome. It looked really cool. And it was a great way to end that wonderful year. But for you personally, that's neat, you earned that. You earned that honor, and it was great that you got to do it. And Irma so well got to be up there as well. And I just think that just is just such a cool thing. And now you could look back to your, wanting to be Woodward and Bernstein, maybe, I'm putting words in your mouth, but yeah, that journalism career at University of Maryland, you fast forward, 20 years plus, and here you are, moderating a major international panel at the UN.
It was pretty special for sure. And I also felt like, I felt so confident in our messaging, the NGA, we had taken on this year and have done, numerous activities throughout the year to participate, but our tagline, as you know, is glass can save the world. Mm-hmm. And I really did feel like that messaging was getting across. Obviously, we are so familiar with the architectural side and the sort of necessary interventions that glass plays in addressing our climate crisis. I mean, just looking at the carbon, 40% of our carbon emissions come from the built environment. So, like, when we think about what we need to do to address this problem, it's our buildings, and that is our glass. We have what it takes in terms of performance, in terms of designing in a zero energy way to meet these benchmarks. But what was so neat about that event was hearing everybody else. You know, I personally have an architectural glass bias. You know, I
Sure.
do think that we are the ones who are really saving the world.
Love
But
it.
you know, hearing about you know, some of the things that I just had no idea about, using glass as a as safe storage for like nuclear waste. You know, I had no idea that this was possible, but at that chemical level, of course, you know, it makes sense. Or you know, glass for health in regrowth of bones, and
Right.
you know, in technology with the fiber optics, the next generation of fiber optics. And I think it really, I don't know, it's pretty neat to be a part of that community and to be part of that conversation.
Yeah, it is. It is awesome. And once again, a tremendous job and kudos to you. Kudos to you.
Oh, thank you.
So again, I'm with Katie Devlin, who is the content director at the National Glass Association, also the editor-in-chief of Glass Magazine. You can find Glass Magazine online at glassmagazine.com. Glass.org is your home for everything in the glass industry, so check that out. You know, one of the big things that you can find on glass.org right now is registering for BEC, conference we have coming up in a few weeks in March in Las Vegas. And Katie, you and I have worked closely on getting this show underway, but you being the content director, this is your world now, you know. And so how is the planning for BEC coming? And do you know what can some people expect out there?
Yeah, I'm excited. And you know, I'm probably not an objective speaker in
Me
that, but
neither.
I
Yeah.
really I mean, first, as you well know, this is our 25th anniversary,
Right.
and that's phenomenal. You know, this event has, and you were there during so many of those, that kind of first iteration of BEC. I mean, like, I'm going to turn the, I can't leave my interview hat, but I mean, what are your thoughts on sort of the past 25 years of BEC?
It's been amazing, the growth and just the way it's turned into such an event with the networking and the education and people always, you know, leaving with something to make their, you know, business or their careers better. You know, I think that was one of the angles you brought in, you know, this year is like everything has to have a good takeaway, you know, and for me, it's always been, you know, the takeaway has always been I got to meet 10 new people. Well, now I think our goal is not only going to meet 10 or 15 or 20 new people, but you're also going to take away some really good educational, you know, nuggets. And I think a lot of people, you know, take them away year after year, but this year I think the focus on that is pretty exciting.
I agree. I mean, we've got some heavy hitters that we're lining up to speak, so that is always always going to be an interesting conversation, interesting and exciting about you know, some big developments in the industry. But you're right about the takeaways. I mean, I think when we look at the goals of this event, it's to ensure that a contract glazer, pretty much any size, can come to this for you know, it's a solid day and a half of really strong programming, and to actually come back to their business with actionable items. So we've got that throughout, looking at everything from you know, project challenges and actually providing the corresponding solutions to those challenges. I don't think that a hurdle that one glazer is facing, I guarantee that there are 25 people in the room who have seen something so similar, but to be able to have that communication and that solution share is exciting. And then that our entire second day, we're calling Labor Day, because I don't know if you all have heard this, but it is hard to find people right now.
Right.
And we're not just talking about the fact that that's a problem. We know that. What we're doing is bringing in speakers to actually talk through the things that have worked, and there's not one answer. But if you can come to this and leave with five things that you can try in terms of recruitment, in terms of training, in terms of your retention, in terms of you know, figuring out how to bring in that new generation of folks, I mean, that's going to be there. So I hope you all will be too. Though register soon, because we opened it. We did a soft launch of Reg what last week, and people are coming in fast. So
It's filling up nicely. So go to glass.org, click on the events tab, look for BEC and register right away and get there and get your hotel room. It's going to be a great show. And Katie and the team are on top of it. So I've been doing these fun ones. And for you, you have a special fun one that I've never done with anyone else because you long ahead of TikTok or long ahead of any social media sort of, you know, explosion, Katie used to do word association at the various industry events where she would corner people like me. If you look on YouTube, there's me with hair on a YouTube. There's a YouTube video of Katie. You know, I'm in this video along with a bunch of other people. I have hair at the time. And it was probably 2008 or 2009, something like that. And Katie used to do word association where she'd ask you about a subject and you'd have to, you know, tell her the first thing that came to mind. And so I figured, you know, as a special, you know, honor to her, to you, I'm going to turn the tables and do word association with you. And I came up with just words. You know, Katie would give you some subjects. So I'm just giving words. Tell me the first thing that comes to mind when I give you these words. I got a handful of words. So we'll start off with the obvious one, glass.
Oh, the answer.
Love it. Music.
Ooh, also the answer.
Yes, and those who don't know Katie, she is a spectacular musician, spectacular. Green.
Green? Our biggest challenge with hyphens.
Absolutely, yep. BEC.
Ooh, you better be there.
Exactly. Sports.
The Packers are a big disappointment. These are extending. My answers are extending.
I thought, I figured it would be the Packers or Bucks to win it all sort of thing this year. So you are a big Milwaukee and Wisconsin sports fan.
Yeah.
Dancing.
Oh, Lindy Hop.
Love it. Cause you are a big time. You've got the dance style. Your current home, Milwaukee.
Ooh. There's the Bucks, you know. Go Bucks, go.
Gotcha. Two more. Glazing.
An industry for women. Let's get more women here.
There you go. And we will have a nice little segment for women in glass and fenestration at BEC. So you got to make sure to attend that. And last but not least, 2023.
Oh, wow.
I stumped you.
No, well, yeah, we're talking. I think we're going to talk about forecasts later, yep. But I would say uncertain.
Uncertain. Okay. And we will talk about forecasts in a moment. Thank you for going through that with me. Katie is better at that than I am, but I had to throw that. and you had some good answers there. I love it. All right. So very cool. So let's switch on to some technologies, you know, and we kind of mentioned a few of them along the way when we were talking about performance, but any technologies that got you going right now and it got you excited?
Yeah, well, I like a lot of folks are pretty intrigued by transparent solar. You know, we've got, spoiler alert, but we're going to be chatting about this a little bit at BEC. I think this is pretty exciting. You know, the folks at Ubiquitous, they've come up with a pretty exciting potential solution here. And, you know, you look 10, 15 years down the road and consider that like all of these buildings might be have energy generating glass facades. That's, you know, it's a fun thing to dream about and to think about. So well, I'm excited at BEC to hear from some of the leaders over at Ubiquitous to, you know, break down where we're at in the realization of that. But the other one that I like to talk through is retrofit solutions.
Nice.
Which seem a little bit less, I don't know, they're a little less exciting than some of these.
But crucial, given that construction, you know, more than half of new construction is going to be retrofit.
Yeah.
So.
Well, and that's where we need to really be focusing our attention. It's, you know, the new build is where we all like to focus our attention sometimes, but it is the retrofit that's going to help us to face daunting climate challenge. So I've been, you know, chatting with a lot of folks recently about these retrofit solutions that we're seeing from glass, particularly those that address the problems of, you know, cost, of hassle. Nobody wants to give up their building, their office building space for 6 months so they can tear up floor by floor. And a lot of these systems were not really designed with retrofit in mind. So it just becomes it's seemingly impossible to figure out how to get high performance systems in there. But the industry is coming up with solutions. We've got thin glass options that are available now. We have, VIG is really making a mark. I think there are ways in which that can fit into that existing glazing system and still have that be thin enough, give you that performance without having to replace everything. So there are solutions out there, and I'm definitely looking closely at that.
Like it. I do think that both are exciting. And retrofit, again, I think it's just, we have a lot of bad buildings also. Mm-hmm. If you look at, I love Texas, I love Dallas, but you look at downtown Dallas, a lot of bad buildings, a lot of bad glass, that was put up in the 80s when you thought that was good at the time. And now those need to be retrofitted, replaced, remodeled. So I think you're dead on there. Good call by you. A couple more, because I know you are swamped, because you definitely wear a lot of hats. I'm with Katie Devlin, Content Director at the National Glass Association, Editor-in-Chief, Glass Magazine, glassmagazine.com, glass.org is places where you can find her. You wrote a book way back when. It's been a few years now, maybe 5 or 6 years, I think. It was called The Owner's Guide to Exit and Succession Planning. I do believe it was a New York Times bestseller. Don't quote me on that, but I do think it was a bestseller in the New York Times.
Don't fact check that, but absolutely it was.
Yeah, no fact check needed. It was definitely top 10. It was right yep. with Chicken Soup for the Soul. Yep. I think they were 1-2 at the time. Yep. I'm curious, because I've told my wife a million times, I'm going to write a book. And I just can't get over that hump. You did it. So first, how was it writing a book? And two, how do you think those insight and details that you provided in 2018 are holding up today? Any more updates coming, that sort of thing?
Yeah, well, first, I mean, I would love to take credit for writing this, but it really was the entire editorial team at Glass Magazine that was putting together a lot of work. The book itself, it features expert advice, essentially, from our, we worked with a great team of folks. Kevin Kennedy was a key author, and Joe Bizzano was another. They run an exit succession planning business, Beacon Exit Planning. Mm-hmm. And they were longtime contributors at the magazine. And I brought this idea to them, like, let's compile this into a book that we can put out. So, worked very closely with them to distill all of the information and organize it, give folks kind of a step-by-step guide looking at each step process. And then we combined it with case studies, and that's where the editors really stepped up. I know Bethany Stow had some great pieces in there, but we were talking to companies that have gone through this and different types of exit planning and succession. Our industry is full of family businesses.
Sure is, yeah.
Many of which are beating all of the odds and making it to, four, even five generations. At Glassbuild, I attended the 100 year anniversary of DeGorder.
Yep.
For the 70, no, it was 100, right?
I think it was 100 for Pete. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, just incredible. And actually the DeGorders were in the book. We featured that. Looking at companies that are moving to ESOPs. We've seen mm-hmm. a few of those. Giroux Glass is one. Salem, actually, they've
always been an ESOP for years. Yeah.
Yeah. I think actually 2004, 2005, I'm thinking, so it's been a while. So to be able to tell those stories, and in terms of whether it's still relevant today, I think in some ways it's become even more important.
Gotcha.
We are seeing, we're starting to see a big management succession in our industry.
Right.
And there are a lot of folks who are wondering how they can retire and not, and have their businesses live on. And that's a very daunting question. And we've seen, many examples of this. We've seen, private equity come in. We've seen sales to similar companies in the field. And of course, management succession. So the book goes through all of that. We don't dig super into tax code and the things that would have changed. It's just general concepts, looking at things you need to consider. So I would certainly recommend to folks, if you are headed for a management succession, if you're thinking about your exit, check it out. We do have it still on glass.org in the store.
Definitely worth checking out, and it's a very easy read too, because you did a great job with graphics, and you know, so it's not all black and white sort of thing. So I thought you did a nice job there.
Oh, thank you. Well, and a shout out to Corey Thacker, our creative force behind that at the NGA. He's
yeah, and so great work. And so we're all just waiting for you with the royalties from that book to take us to like St. Martin or the Caymans or something.
It's coming. Yeah.
It's coming. Okay. It's coming. I love it. Great book, though, and a must, especially with our industry and so much going on with you know, if you are thinking about or going through any sort of succession planning, it is definitely worth it. So, and congrats to you. Kudos to you and the team to pull that all together. That's still a heck of an accomplishment. You know, it really is. So last but not least, let's talk about 2023 and what you see, because what's interesting about you is that you talk to a lot of people. And you have to, because of what you do, your role in life, your role with you know, the National Glass Association, Glass Magazine. So you get a lot of people that are, you know, giving you insight. And so I'm curious what you're feeling about this year. Obviously, we hear from the Connor Locars of the world, who are fantastic. And that kind of gets into all of our thoughts. But you have the ability to get, you know, you're hearing from, you know, big companies, small companies, men, women, you know, you name it, they're talking to you. What are you feeling about 2023 in our business and overall the economy?
Yeah, I think taking that sort of broad look at it, it is uncertain in a lot of ways. You know, this at every economist we hear at every event, they say, you know, here are all of the things that might derail this forecast, just so you know. All right. Of these geopolitical concerns, you know, this, that, the other thing, maybe a pandemic might, you know, change the trajectory of our entire lives and businesses for, you know, several years. So I think some of the things that on the broad level, I am certainly watching this debt ceiling debate. I mean, that could certainly cause some excitement. But, you know, who knows? I just got a notification right before our call, Apple News notification that the U.S. is considering banning TikTok. So who knows? Maybe all of Gen Z is going to flee in search of TikTok.
Yeah.
And that will create its own thing. So we don't know. But what I do know is that our companies, the folks I talk to, have been scrambling for 18 months. You know, they have been so busy. They haven't been able to find people. Projects have been delayed. So for the most part, I think on the commercial side, backlogs are pretty strong. And a lot of those projects really do need to happen. It's not like in 08 where folks were just canceling all of these jobs. I think a lot of this is just necessary construction that's been waiting for now a couple of years for some of these, because the pandemic disrupted so many things with our logistics. So, you know, from reading, chatting with folks and reading from the construction prognosticators, we are slowing down, absolutely. Mm-hmm. How will it affect our businesses? I think there's a lot of optimism that this will just give people a chance to take a breath, to get caught up, to work through some of these projects. I mean, residential, on the residential side, anybody listening who's doing that, you're probably already feeling this.
Yeah.
You know, single family construction is down quite a bit. But that's not to say that you're not getting shower installs, you know, for the glass shops that are working in that. But you know, one bright side of that is, you know, the people who work in residential are now available. So for commercial folks, I think the labor might actually ease a little bit. We're seeing inflation slow already, so that's going to ease. So I'm optimistic. If we can avoid all of these big mega shifts that you know could trip up the whole economy, I think our industry is going to be fine. Most folks are pretty diversified. I think most folks learned a pretty rough lesson back in the Great Recession, and you know, are in a stronger position now than they were back then. We've got a lot of savvy folks leading a lot of great glass companies. So, I think in general, I don't want to be, you know, Pollyanna-ish, but I am optimistic that our folks are going to do well this year.
Nice. No, I agree on a lot of that. And I mean, you know, No question, our industry is resilient. You know, people are resilient. They've fought through so much. And when you said uncertain earlier, for me, where the uncertainty is that, you know, and I've said it on this podcast before, I've said it on my blog, is that we don't have a benchmark to compare to or history to compare to, because COVID blew all that up. Mm-hmm. You know, so yeah, the Great Recession, you know, 2008, 2009, 2010, you know, it'd be nice to be able to say, okay, here's where we're at in that progression. Yeah. It doesn't compare anymore. You know, it's not the same. You know, COVID changed everything, because our problems right now are, a lot of it is COVID related, not recession related. You know, so it to me, it's like, you know, you just have to roll with the punches, like you said, and you have to, you know, just keep plugging along. And I do think you're right. I mean, I think that with residential starting to slow up, that could benefit us on the, you know, on the non-res side, maybe pick up a few people, especially project managers, which are still in desperate need. And those folks could be pretty much plug and play, quite frankly. Yeah. And so that's the hope. But I think interesting year ahead, my friend, no doubt.
Yeah. Oh, for sure. Well, and I, you know, just to think about if each segments within the industry, you know, I'm looking at office, that has been, we were declaring the death of the office building back in 2020 when we were having a lot of conversations, and we're seeing like things are changing. You know, I think businesses are kind of pulling back. They want to get back into those spaces. They want that more traditional office environment. So even that area, I mean, I don't think office is going to perform incredibly well in 2023, but I do think looking down the line, that actually, you know, might be something that bounces back once the other segments are tripping. So
yeah, and I think you know, right now I see the hotel and transportation side, you know, picking up quite a bit, and that'll help kind of ease what's going on the office side, because I think that whole thing's come back with, you know, ferocity. Hotels and wanting to, you know, get them either remodeled or built. It's unbelievable the way that's taken off. Well, this has been tremendous. I've been with Katie Devlin. She is the content director at the National Glass Association, editor-in-chief of Glass Magazine, the best glass magazine in our industry. Read it online at glassmagazine.com. Subscribe to it. Go to glass.org. Check out what's going on in there with the NGA, and including under the events tab, BEC, which is coming up March 5th through the 7th in Las Vegas. Definitely something you want to attend. And you could see Katie there and chat with her, pick her brain more. But Katie, thank you so much for taking the time. This was awesome to finally get you on here. Mm-hmm. And I had no idea you were a Terrapin either. College thing. I had no idea you were a Terp. This is like that's my big takeaway of all the great things you said. You're like, you're a Terp. So, but you're awesome. So thank you so much for taking the time today.
Yeah. Thanks for having me, Max. I really do appreciate it. And I appreciate all that you're doing for the glass industry too. I mean, your voice is such a crucial one. So thank you.
Well, thank you. And I look forward to seeing you here in a few weeks.
Yep. Can't wait. Thanks, Max.
Thank you. Okay. Next up on the From the Fabricator podcast, the February edition, I am thrilled to be joined by three really important people who are doing something huge out in California. Christy Rayberger of A Glasgow, Nathan Seaman of Architectural Grills and Sunshades, and Adam Posick of Pacific Coast Glazing. They are the brains behind the California Glass Association. We're going to talk to them about that, about their businesses as well in 2023 and all the good stuff coming up. Folks, thank you so much for joining me on the podcast.
Thank you for having us.
Yes, awesome. Thank you, Max.
Awesome. It's great to have you on. And this is exciting. Each of you, you know, you're putting yourselves out there. It's important to have organizations like this. And I'm a big fan of organizations like this. I've gotten lucky to go to Texas and speak in front of them, Colorado, and be with those folks. So being involved, Michigan, of course, I sat on the board of one of Michigan's glazing contractor associations for a few years, way, way back in the day. So I'm a big fan of this process. And obviously NGA is important to me as well. And so that's the granddaddy of them all. But so let's start to talk a little bit. Each of you have come to the table with starting up the California Glass Association. And just so everybody is paying attention, if you want to learn more about the California Glass Association and get involved, they do have a website online, www.californiaglassassociation.org. So make sure you check that out. But let's start with you, Christy. What was the impetus to drive you into this and get this process going?
Education was really the driving force for me I actually had looked into starting this in 2020. And what struck me was talking with some other suppliers, I won't name drop, but I was talking about education and trying to formalize some kind of training program here in California, because installing the products that we buy is so important. We need to know how those installation instructions that they provide us is vital to our success. And I kind of remember them saying, well, we can give you the PowerPoint that we give the architects. And I was kind of upset, honestly, but sure. just disappointed, and really kind of said, we need to find something for California.
Yeah. Yeah. No doubt. And that makes plenty of sense. Adam, what was it for you?
For me, it was more that there's a large community out there that, you know, I barely know anyone in, other than, you know, breezing through LinkedIn and seeing them on there.
Right.
I talked to Christy a couple of years ago. She talked about, you know, gaining interest in starting this. And I was on board with it 100% then. And she's, you know, kind of led the charge originally. And I was on board. Like I said, you don't get to run into many fellow glass shops or glazing shops, maybe on a job walk here and there, or at some sort of, you know, contractor meeting. But, you know, I don't really know many of them. And I'd like to get to know, you know, people we compete with, and people we don't compete with, and just, you know, see how they do things and see how we can further our cause in our industry. It's complicated, and it's a lot of work. So.
Yeah, no doubt. And again, that's two great reasons. Now going to you, Nathan, you're coming from a different angle, being a supplier, a manufacturer.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so different sort of pressure on you. And I assume it wasn't you who sent Christy the PowerPoint and said, figure it out. So
No, thankfully it wasn't me that did that.
I didn't think that you worked that way.
So as you mentioned, my role as a vendor for glazers, I'm a part of local associations all over the country. I get to travel around, be a part of them, see the value of them. And I've always, as I'm there, I think back to, you know, we really need something like this in my home state. I'm going all over the place, but there's just nothing like this back at home in California. So it was actually last summer, I was talking with you, Max, at the ball game before the TGA event. And I kind of expressed that, like, man, I wish we had this at home. You know, anybody that's trying to get this rolling? And then it just, the domino started falling from there. You got me in touch with Dan Pompeo, who got me in touch with Christy, who called up Adam. And then 2 months later, we were official and charging ahead. So it's exciting.
I'm thrilled by that, because I do remember that night, that conversation, and how, you know, that Texas group is something, you know, and you know, seeing that community and the way they work, and you're jealous of it. You're like, hey, this works here. So. I think the community is important. So that's my next question. And I'll start it off with you, Christy. I mean, you compete against people and you work with people and so on, but that community makes a difference, because it's that old saying of, you know, we all get lifted, a rising tide lifts all, sort of thing.
Absolutely. We are all so much more connected than I think a lot of us would like to admit. My business can easily affect someone else's business, and theirs easily affects mine. But I think with the glazing shortages and, you know, so many things that have changed within the industry, who doesn't need some help these days with kind of keeping up with what's happening out there? And so I think having the CGA will be such a benefit to the community, hopefully California as a whole, and then each individual little, you know, communities and cities that make us up.
Yeah, absolutely. And Adam, I mean, you kind of talked about already the community aspect of getting beyond LinkedIn. So it'll be nice to have, you know, local people and, you know, folks fighting the same similar battles, right?
Yeah, for sure. You know, it's if we can get together in the same room and start, you know, working together instead of, and, you know, without actually knowing them, you know, it almost feels like we're working against each other. But once you start to get to know them, and, you know, like Chrissy's mentioned, in our, one of our previous conversations, you break bread with them, you start to get to know them.
Right.
If we could do that and work together, you know, things would be much better for all of us, for sure.
No doubt. And Nathan, I mean, you could speak to it because you're the one who goes to a lot of these things. And Christy and Adam are focused on their markets, and you're out traveling. So you see it firsthand how big a community can make a difference.
Absolutely. It's all about the relationships. It's really hard to work with each other, to seek advice from somebody, to share resources with somebody, or just share your experience with them if you don't know them. And so you got to have that baseline of a relationship. All the time I have to, you know, cold call somebody to find out if they're working on a job. And it's always such a breath of fresh air when, oh, hey, this is in this market where I know this person and I know who to call and who to ask for. And so just that relationship is really the core. And that's one of the things that having a local association does. It helps to break that ice, build those relationships, and hopefully build them in a fun way. Because it's easier to pick up the phone and call someone after you've, you know, met them, got to know them. Maybe you've golfed with them. Maybe you've shared a meal with them. It really is a kind of a springboard to that relationship.
Absolutely. Yeah.
And I got to think, Nathan, you've got to know like 98% of this industry at this rate, because you do have no fear picking up the phone and cold calling people. I can tell you that you've got to know everybody.
You know, it sure seems like it, but surprisingly, Max, I'm constantly meeting new people and going to new offices.
Right, good.
It's a big world, so it's a lot of fun getting to know everybody, though.
That impresses me. That impresses me. All right, so let's talk timeline. This is only a couple months old, but you guys are moving really, really quickly. You know, Christy, you know, what are we looking at for step one, step two, step three, and so on, reaching to where you're comfortable?
Yeah, step one is get our name out there.
Right.
Make sure people want to get involved and let them know what we're doing. So we're having an event at the end of February to in San Diego to kind of get our name out there, at least locally here. And I think we have thoughts and talks about trying to get people maybe via Zoom who want to participate. But we definitely... we have a lot of ideas. We have a lot of ambition, and we want to keep a steady growth. And we know that's going to take a lot of people, not just from Adam and I both are in San Diego, not just from San Diego, but, you know, LA to you know, San Francisco and all the places in between and even further.
Yeah, it's a big state. Yes. Adam, anything to add on the timeline and goals?
We were talking earlier, Christy and Nathan and I, you know, we definitely want to garner, you know, a lot of interest in this organization. We want it to grow. We don't want it to grow so fast that, you know, we get a lot of interest and we don't, you know, start hitting our targets and then have it fizzle out. We want to do it right. So this thing, you know, continues to go on for a long time. So
that makes sense. That makes sense. And Nathan, I mean, yeah, you know that the pratfalls, because again, being around the country, organizations that don't have a timeline thought out are kind of troublesome for the most part. So what are you thinking about this whole timeline adventure?
Yeah, I mean, the whole time as I think about it, I'm thinking about all the other associations and the other events and, oh, that's so cool. And I want to do this and I want to do that. But as Christy and Adam said, the growth is really going to be dependent on demand. It's a really big state, but we're starting with who we know and where we are, and we're going to grow from there. Right now, we don't have any members in San Francisco, so we're not going to launch a meeting in San Francisco. But eventually, you know, we want to have meetings and events all across the state to serve everybody and their needs.
Good.
As Christy said, you know, our first in-person meeting is happening this February, and we're hoping that's a springboard to kind of kick off the basis of growing the membership. And then I'm looking forward to seeing, you know, some quarterly meetings, maybe some educational sessions, some lunches, some once or twice a year, some big events to really kind of model some of the successful things we've seen from other associations.
I like it. And that's February in San Diego, which it'll be funny because you'll get people from the East and the Midwest dealing with snow being, hey, can I join? I'll stop by in February in San Diego. So,
hey, you're welcome anytime, Max.
I appreciate that, but I have a feeling you're going to see Minnesota glass shops, you know, showing up at your door saying, hey, I'm all for it. Again, I'm with Christy Rayberger of A Glasgow, Nathan Seaman of Architectural Grills and Sunshades, Adam Posick of Pacific Coast Glazing, and they make up the founding members of the California Glass Association. Find them online, californiaglassassociation.org. This is just getting going, and if you're in California, you have to do this. It's for your good. And so it brings me to another question of, Nathan talked a little bit earlier about meeting in Texas, and I've mentioned Texas. Are there other organizations that you saw, that you wanted to replicate? I mean, Christy, you've been working on this for a while. You know, I'm sure you had some goal organizations to replicate in mind.
Actually, when I first started looking into it, I reached out to the NGA, and the NGA kind of said, hey, go look at the UGA.
Okay,
the Utah
Glass Utah
Association.
Yes, mm-hmm. Yes. Very new and doing fantastic. Absolutely.
So yes. I had talked with some of the people who had just started it, and I've been in contact with Marin a few times about what they're doing, because they are doing some very interesting and fun things.
Absolutely. They really have hit the ground running, and that is a good example, because they're relatively new, had to start from scratch, kind of like you guys have. Obviously they don't cover the amount of territory. Utah is pretty tight there, given between San Diego and San Francisco. It's, there's like 10 states in the middle of that. So a little bit of a bigger challenge. Adam, how about you? Any organizations that you liked?
Well, to be honest with you, I wasn't too familiar with many of the organizations. I was aware of the NGA, obviously. But, and that was really just from going to the Glass Show over the last couple of years in Vegas.
Good.
Or seeing them here in the Glass Magazine, which just got delivered today.
Nice.
I hadn't had too much familiarity with any of the organizations up until, I started working with Christy and Nathan, that I've become more familiar of the ones outside the NGA.
Good. Yeah, fresh thought. And then now, Nathan, you've been around, so you've been. I'm curious, what were your favorites, or what were the ones you want to be like?
You know, as I've been to so many different events, I really like what the Texas Glass Association is doing. They're equally a big state. They've got a very diverse market like California. And so they've got kind of the umbrella chapter. They've got some other more regional chapters. They're kind of sharing the load on events in different regions. They're doing really well with it. So I've had my eyes on them and kind of watching how they're doing it. And then more specifically, HAGA, they're in Houston, the Houston Area Glass Association. Shout out to Dorothy there. Yep. She's doing a great job, and she was really helpful in our early stages of kind of helping us get launched and what to think about and where to go for things and introducing us to people. And so definitely a lot of them I've been looking. I mean, I went on everybody's website and downloaded their bylaws if they were available. We kind of spied on everybody, but for me, Texas has definitely been the one to watch.
I like it. I love my folks from the Texas Glass Association, and love Dorothy at HAGA, and what she's done, and her passion and energy there is fantastic. So good on all. All right. A few more things, because I know you guys are really busy. I want to capture some things about you guys in your current business, because a lot of people who listen and watch this podcast, they really like to find out how the other half lives, sort of thing. So we're going to cover that. But before we get that, I've been doing the fun question for everybody here in the last couple of years. And so I'm curious for each one of you, what was your dream job growing up? And as I joked with you on my outline, you can't say it's starting the California Glass Association. That does not count. I mean, you could have gotten away with it, but you can't say it. Christy, your dream job growing up.
I've been working with my dad since I was 16.
He
started the company over 30 years ago. And did I necessarily know I was going to go work with him? No, I didn't. I just kind of figured, I'll work here and then go off to college. But as I was working with him, I had thoughts of, okay, I'll become a dietitian. I really like, health and fitness and but that didn't pan out. The glass industry sucked me in, and I can't say no anymore.
I love it. So you went from something healthy and normal to the glass industry.
Yes.
So I do love it. I do come from a family business, and I got to work with my dad, my brother and my sister, cousins, my wife, was actually a customer. So that was fun too. I get the family business thing, and very cool. And I like the dietitian angle, but we're glad you're here. We're glad you're here. Adam, curious for you, what was your dream job?
When I was a kid, I always liked the, just like treasure hunting and anything to do with treasure hunting. I always thought being an archaeologist was cool. I always see the shows or whatever where they had the big metal boxes with that screen in it, and they'd go sifting it through and finding whatever artifacts were in there. And when we were young, we used to live up in Northern California, and my father would take us out fishing and gold panning along the river for long weekends. And I just getting to the bottom of that pan, sifting it through and trying to find a speck of gold. I just thought that was great. So archaeologist for sure when I was
Love it. The gold rush. Absolutely. Very, very cool. I like that. That's cool. And Nathan, you?
You know, it always morphs over time when you're a kid, but oddly enough, the earliest thing I can remember wanting to be is an orthodontist. I don't know really what stuck out to me. I think I went to an appointment when one of my older siblings got their braces on, and maybe I was like 7 or 8 years old, and I thought, you know, that's what I'm going to do with my life. So that's the earliest thing I can remember. Obviously, that didn't exactly end up what I was going after.
I don't know if there's another kid in this world that wants to be an orthodontist when they're a kid. That's impressive.
An odd kid.
No, I think it's interesting. And now, you know, because you wanted to be an orthodontist, I think dealing with architects is like going to the dentist anyway. So you can, no wonder you get along with all those architects so well. You know,
it can be sometimes. Yeah.
Yeah. Very, very cool. Okay. I like it. Thank you guys. That was the fun question. I appreciate that. And good stuff. Good stuff. So a couple more, and we're switching over a little bit. So I want to know a little bit more about you guys and your businesses. So Christy, you're in San Diego at A Glasgow. What do you guys do? And you know, just, you know, give me a quick synopsis of your business and the markets you serve.
We're a commercial and residential glass and glazing subcontractor. We serve the greater San Diego region. So we pretty much, I like to say we do showers, tabletops, air traffic control towers, pretty much anything in between.
Okay. I like it. I like it. Very cool. And Adam, you?
We primarily are engaged in federal projects, a lot of military work across the country. We're currently in North Carolina and just wrapped up some projects in Hawaii, and obviously around here in San Diego, we got a lot of military bases that keep us busy and throughout the state, and a lot of public works types projects, and a little bit of commercial work sprinkled in there.
Nice.
So it keeps us fairly busy.
Nice. Nathan, a huge fan of your company, but I know a lot of people may not be aware of what Architectural Grills and Sunshades do. Can you give a little rundown of that?
Yeah, so Architectural Grills and Sunshades, we just happen to make the best sunshades and sunshade products around. No, but in all seriousness, so we specialize in fully fabricated, top of the line special cool designs. So we'll do everything from the vanilla plain sunshade to some of the coolest fins and sunshades that you've seen around.
Cool.
I'm loving it.
I love it. And so Christy, how's business? You know, that's the one thing that I get, one of the biggest feedbacks I get other than, you know, getting to know people is they love to know how people are holding up in the business. And so I kind of, you know, how's business right now and what's 2023 looking for you guys?
Business right now, survivable.
Gotcha.
it's busy. For us, we've got the work. We're struggling to get the manpower. You know, and we've also had a lot of turnover in the last probably couple of months. So dealing with training issues, and when you're a small company such as ourselves, you know, the training, you're the trainer, you are the HR, you are the, you know, the contract specialist, you are fill in whatever blank you'd like. So there's so many hats that sometimes I find myself wearing, and it's a lot to keep up with at times, but that's with the hope of the CGA is to help. I think to Adam, he brought it up a couple times, reaching out to others with, I've got this problem. I need some help. Can you help me?
Yeah. Yeah, that peer-to-peer thing is huge in that sort of scenario. So, and the manpower thing is not going away. So it is a challenge that you have to continue to address. Adam, you guys looking okay this year?
Yeah. The first half of this year was a little roller coaster. We were slow, and we did lose some of our manpower. Second half of the year is the complete opposite. We're busy as all can be right now, and we could use manpower. So it's trying to avoid those big roller coasters, just kind of keep it more steady. That's everyone's dream, but it's tough to have these projects just line up so we can keep the same core group busy and not have to go find a bunch of new guys that aren't there.
Yeah. Our industry for some reason can't have like a simple, like straight roadway. We're always doing one of these and it's so frustrating, you know, because, you know, people just don't understand how hard it is to ramp up, gear down, ramp up, gear down. And especially in a world that we've got right now, labor wise. Now, Nathan, how are you guys holding up? Because obviously you're in a different world than Christy and Adam is in.
Yeah. I mean, you know, there always seems to be those points in time that you count from. And lately it's 2020. Everybody, it's like time started in 2020. Everybody counts from 2020. And since 2020 and everything getting shook up, we've been thrown one hurdle after another. If it's not, you know, a shortage on this, it's a price increase on that, it's a delay on this. But even still, I'm proud to say that in 2022, we finished with the strongest year ever in the history of the company.
Great.
And have been growing year over year. So that's been really encouraging to see.
That's awesome. And I point to you for that because you've done a heck of a job, no doubt. And also, it is funny that BC and AC now mean before COVID and after COVID. That's what we're into now. I mean, that's how it is. It is. So wrapping up, anything else to add, Christy? I'll go to each one of you, with CGA in 2023, life in 2023, any final words from you?
I really do think it's going to be great. I think it's going to have its own set of unique challenges, but we're here. We aren't going to go away anytime soon. And I just want to say one last final thing. I really want to give a shout out to Dan, to you, Max, and Dan. And Nathan for really kind of like, hey, Christy, you remember this? You said you were going to do it. Nathan has been so helpful in getting this going. And I'm so glad to have him and Adam a part of the team to really see this come into fruition.
That's awesome. And Dan's energy is one thing. If we could tap into him, he could like, if you put a plug into Dan, he could like power half the state. I mean, right. The guy is just so frenetic and so energetic. I love him. Love him to death. Known him a long, long time. Adam, any final thoughts from you?
Looking forward to launching the CGA and seeing our local glazing contractors and suppliers come together, under one roof, I guess, and just moving forward with them. If we could survive that COVID and those price escalations we all went through and lead time delays and that, we can get through anything. So
you bet. No doubt. We are a resilient industry for sure. And final words from you, Nathan.
Yeah. I mean, just what you said about resilience and back to the last question, we've seen so much adaptation and change and jumping over hurdles through the last couple of years. I know that there's forecasts already on the horizon for some choppy seas ahead in this year. One of my favorite bloggers, podcasters out of the Michigan area, just in his last one, was talking about some of the challenges upcoming ahead this year. And I know that we're going to find creative ways to overcome them because I've seen it happen. And I'm looking forward to kind of seeing how that comes to fruition, and especially how the California Glass Association can really support that from a local level. And equip people with the tools and resources and relationships that they need.
No doubt. This is a brilliant idea and great execution by you guys, the California Glass Association, just getting going. And it's exciting. So if you're in California, you need to get involved. You need to check out the website at californiaglassassociation.org or reach out to Christy or Nathan or Adam and talk to them about it. But you need to be involved, and I'll keep banging the drum. But again, Christy Rayberger from A Glasgow, Nathan Seaman from Architectural Grills and Sunshades, Adam Posick from Pacific Coast Glazing. I'll get your name out once correctly, I think. Thank you guys so much for taking the time today. And I will continue to bang the drum for you. We're going to get this thing off and running.
Awesome. Thank you, Max.
Thanks, guys.
Thanks.
Okay, okay. To wrap things up this month, I'm thrilled to be joined once again for the second year in a row by Nick St. Denis, Director of Research, KMR, Key Media and Research. You can find his amazing work. He does the Glass and Glazing Quarterly Review, and it's fantastic. You can find it at research.keymediaresearch.com. You also see his writings in U.S. Glass Magazine, so you can find him throughout the web and throughout the Key Media sort of atmosphere or hemisphere or whatever that word is. But Nick, thank you so much for doing the podcast.
Thanks, Max. It's nice to be back. You know, I enjoyed it last time we spoke. You know, I can't believe it was a year ago already. So a lot has changed, I think, since then.
Yeah, it sure has. Time flies. And I'm thrilled you made the time. I love what you do. For folks that may not know Nick, you know, and I guess we should just give, because not everybody listened or watched last year, a quick tidbit exactly what you do, because you are very unique. You're a unicorn in our world. You are, you know, the go-to on the glass and glazing sort of research information.
Sure. Yeah. So we are basically the leading information and data provider to the architectural glass and glazing industry. And we also cover several other segments, including doors and windows. And we even cover automotive glass and that sort of thing. Nice. But essentially what we are is we're a custom research provider, but we also provide syndicated research reports, basically any information that, you know, businesses in the glass industry need to make their decisions. You know, they come to us and we help them. We work alongside them on various projects, as well as providing like the reports that you had mentioned, you know, and we do a lot of speaking engagements at conferences, trade shows and business events and things like that. So
super, super. Well, Nick does a fantastic job. Thank you for that. And so let's dive in. So we talked last year and you did a great job of kind of laying out where the landscape would go. And I think it went as close to what you predicted as possible. I mean, I think you were there. What did you think about how last year turned out? You know, overall, based also on your predictions, and did anything catch you by surprise?
Yeah. So first off, the main indicator that we primarily look at to get an idea of what is happening in the glass and glazing industry in terms of volume of activity is glass and glazing construction spending. So what that is it's kind of a figure that we've sort of invented here, where we take the construction figure numbers from a variety of sources. Break it down, reconstruct it based on what's most important to architectural glass and glazing. And so in doing that, over the past several years, we've obviously done forecasting and we've been able to look back and see how that's tracked. Well, last year when we spoke, it was about the time where we did our forecast for 2022, and we had projected a 4.9% increase in architectural glass and glazing spending in non-residential. Mm-hmm. And just ran the numbers last week, and we actually ended up at 5.7% increase. So we were within 1% of our estimation. So despite all the kind of craziness that happened throughout the year, that was pretty nice to see that we're on track with sort of our models and projections and things like that.
Fantastic.
And so, So in terms of like the overall number, there definitely wasn't much that surprised us. Thankfully we were right. but I will say that the commercial side of things, you know, we divided up between commercial, and institutional. Commercial being more of like the kind of private money and, you know, office buildings, retail, hotel, that sort of thing. And then institutional would be, you know, healthcare, educational, et cetera. And the commercial side definitely performed better than we expected. Both sides did, but commercial in particular performed better. And so that was, I guess that was a little bit of a surprise, and it was good to see, you know, certain segments like office construction, which after the pandemic or during the pandemic, everybody's kind of terrified about office construction. And in the future, that might be the case, or it might be something that we don't see as much growth, but we've at least been seeing a stable work in that segment. And then hotels have really bounced back since the pandemic, which has been a really big thing and has actually kind of helped lifted, the commercial side. So those were two areas that were, I guess, notable. And then on the institutional side, obviously, healthcare building and healthcare, anything related to healthcare,
sure,
has really boomed, and we're projecting that out to be a really big segment for years to come.
Fantastic, fantastic. And excuse me, what's interesting is, I mean, the hotel side you knew was kind of due, just because, you know, people have that hunger to get back out there, business travel starting to pick back up. But I loved hearing about the office standpoint, because there was that dire, that dire thought. Now, like you said, you got to keep an eye on it in the future because it is pretty volatile. And so it kind of leads me into my next question on COVID. It feels like, at least to me, that there's still a little bit of a COVID hangover with regards to commercial construction jobs. things that should have got going in, you know, early 2021 sort of thing, and just kept sliding and sliding and sliding because of COVID. Is that just me, or are you seeing still kind of a leftover residue of COVID out there as it affects the construction market?
Yeah, there's probably a little bit of that. I mean, you know, there was a pretty big dip in 2021 in construction spending as a result of what transpired in 2020 and sort of all that. So we've been seeing obviously a recovery from that over the last couple of years. So it's hard to tell, you know, what's the volume that would have been there, and then what's actually kind of a bounce back from what we lost at during the pandemic. But I mean, I don't necessarily think it's a terrible thing, because if there are projects and backlog that's kind of lagging out there, yeah, it's going to kind of help lift things and sort of spread things out throughout the next couple of years. So, but like going back to hotel, for example, like that, like the hospitality sector took a huge hit, obviously in 2020 yes. with business travel declining rapidly. And then also, you know, leisure travel and those sorts of things. And that impacted the any construction surrounding hotels and that sort of thing. So we saw like a 30 to 40% decrease in 2021 in that segment. But like you said, it had to bounce back. That's not a segment that's going to like decimate and then not come back ever. Maybe like kind of retail sort of did for a little while, but it's coming back. So that's kind of a positive to the COVID hangovers. We have this segment that's needs to at least get back to the levels it was at before the pandemic, and is still working up to get to that point. So really that's kind of providing a lift to the, you know, to the overall. I'm not saying that hotel is like is lifting the entire commercial segment, but it's providing a good balance to it. So in terms of a COVID hangover, I guess that's kind of part of it. But it seems like I don't know. It's just like speaking to glazing contractors and others in the industry over the past several years, it seems like everyone's mostly weathering the storm pretty well. And that whole, you know, the Great Recession, everything coming out of that, everyone's still stayed pretty smart since then. So I think we're in a pretty good position at the moment.
Good. And I appreciate that. It is a resilient world we both work in. There's no doubt about that. And so before we get to 2023, just Nick St. Denis is with me, Director of Research, KMR, Key Media and Research. He does the Glass and Glazing Quarterly Review. If you're not getting it, you need to go sign up. You can sign up at research.keymediaresearch.com. You can Google that. You can usually find him once in a while through usglassmag.com. And you can find him sometimes, just in this past issue of US Glass Magazine, you had a full 2-page spread with some of your info. So sign up for the Glass and Glazing Quarterly Review. So Nick, a couple more questions, because I know you got a thousand things going on. 2023, and that's probably what everybody listening to this podcast is probably yelling at their phone or whatever they're listening to. Ask him about this year. So here we go. What are you seeing for the year ahead?
Yeah, I think it's going to be a little bit of a continuation from 2022, just to, you know, not necessarily as positive, probably, you know, low to mid single digit percentage growth year over year. And then I think that's going to trickle down even further in 2024, and where it's going to be almost stable rather than, you know, increasing. But I mean, the positive is that we continue to see, you know, incremental increases regardless. And, you know, looking at the overall economy, there's sometimes a misperception where, you know, people hear some issue with the overall economy or even the overall construction economy, and they say, well, you know, that might be trouble ahead for us. But, you know, the glass and glazing industry is a specific part of the construction segment. Right. I mean, you know, when you hear construction economists talking about the overall construction economy, I mean, they're talking about, you know, warehousing, manufacturing buildings, which take up a lot of square footage and take up a lot of share of that industry. You know, highway, street, infrastructure, all those things that don't necessarily affect us directly.
Correct.
So we like to take a more pinpointed approach at looking at what's ahead. And at the moment, it seems like, you know, specifically by segment, you know, the office segment is definitely stabilizing. It's been increasing, you know, at mid single digit percent year over year, sometimes more than that over the past 10 years. We're not going to see that for a little while. It's going to be more stable. It's going to be more 0%, 1%, -1%, that kind of thing.
Right.
But you're going to continue to see an increase in hotel construction. I think the other commercial side, which includes a lot of retail type buildings and other commercial type buildings, I think we're going to see a good bounce back there. So that's definitely a positive. And so while you might see some slowdown in the next couple of years in like warehouse, for example, which was booming the last several years, you know, it's going to be lifted by other areas that are more important to us. And then on the institutional side, you know, we seem to be, it's pretty stable over there. I mean, you know, Healthcare is going to continue to be a very stable and strong segment that's not going to be as volatile as anything on the commercial side. And then education, of course, that sort of varies year over year depending on the area and what kind of funding there is. But overall, from a national standpoint, that's another segment that's very strong. So we are, you know, we're projecting like a relatively like modest year ahead. You know, there are some headwinds and some things that are to look out for, but I mean, a lot of them we've addressed last year. The main thing that I guess I didn't mention earlier that maybe surprised us was, you know, we had some pretty large price increases in flat glass in the first half of last year.
Yeah.
And that was a big shock to the system. And we're looking at, you know, one of the things we follow a lot is the producer price index for flat glass and for right. other related materials. And that is basically measuring the rate of the inflation within our industry. And as of the last quarter of this year, it was at about 25%, which is about the same percentage increase that we saw from the manufacturers early in the year. So it seems like the sort of the pricing and all that sort of thing has finally caught up from those price increases, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
And so I think hopefully that we're starting to see some stabilization there. So I think moving forward, hopefully that's less of a concern. And then like the supply chain and disruptions that have happened over the past couple of years seem to be mitigating to some degree. So overall, I feel like we're going to see another positive year. It's just not going to be quite what we saw last year. And then, like I said, 2024, you might see a little bit slower growth there too. But both years, we project at least a little bit of growth.
Nice, nice. It's positive stuff. I like hearing it. Yeah, and you're right. The supply chain, with the exception of a few products, seemingly has calmed down. The pricing situation seemingly has calmed down. But as we saw last year, those things can come out of nowhere and drop kind of like an anvil on top of your head, sort of thing. So
it seems like that's kind of what it is too. In the industry, is like, you know, you look at the overall, you know, you look at overall inflation, like from a CPI standpoint, or you look at it even from a PPI standpoint of all industries, and it's going to, you know, go up and down moderately over time. You know, CPI obviously is very high of late, but with glass, it's you know, hey, you know, these are the prices, and then all of a sudden after 3 years, it's like we're gonna make up lost time. And yeah. So it kind of hits you all at once, and so that's what we saw. And we saw sort of the metal side as well. There were some major fluctuations in metal, although that's come down a little bit while glass is continuing up. So
right.
So, you know, you'd assume that moving forward, I'm not speaking for anybody, I'm just saying moving forward, you'd assume that that was kind of what they needed to do. And now we're going to move forward, hopefully. So
exactly. You're assuming it's the correction of the market that needed to happen for a long time. And that's the kind of thing that people finally got their arms around. But I guess we'll see. But this is good stuff. And in your insights onto this coming year is huge, huge. So thank you for sharing that. Now, before I let you go, a couple more things. One, a fun one. I always ask a fun question. You were one of the first people I actually started to ask fun questions to last year, because you're a huge sports fan, and one of your favorite teams is the good old New York Jets, J-E-T-S, yeah. Just said Jets. But who's going to be the quarterback starting in the fall for the New York Jets? What do you think?
Well, that's interesting timing, given all the
recent talk.
Yep.
I would like to see it be Aaron Rodgers for sure. I mean, even by towards the end of the year, even before like all this had come up, I was watching them play. I think it was Miami, and it was like around Christmas time. I was with family, and they're like, and they're talking about Aaron Rodgers. Oh, is he going to retire? Blah, blah, blah. I'm like, I think he's going to be a Jet next year. Kind of joking. And now it's, I don't know. I mean, the Jets hired his old offensive coordinator, which he's 2-time MVP under. Not saying that guy had anything to do with it, but you know, at least there's a connection there. So we're kind of hoping maybe that'd be the ideal thing. But it's probably gonna end up being, if not him, it's gonna end up being like Derek Carr or something, which does not get me excited at all. and I don't know. I mean, it's they're so stacked everywhere else except maybe the offensive line, that really all they need is a quarterback that can complete some passes. Yeah. But even Derek Carr, it's like, you're gonna win your playoff game maybe, but it's not gonna, you're not gonna get past the big dogs in the AFC. So I'm I'm shooting high, and we're gonna try to go for Aaron Rodgers. Seems like everybody's all in on it. We'll see what happens.
I like it. And the one thing people don't talk enough about is Breece Hall getting injured was a big turning point for this team, because he played such a huge role. And him going out, even though the guys who replaced him did a nice job, and they traded for James Robinson and tried to do some things there. But Breece Hall was a big loss.
Yeah, you can just look at their, you know, the season, and basically it tracks along with him. It's like, all right, once he got hurt, you know, that's kind of where the wheel started to fall off. So it's pretty evident that he was the the catalyst. Hopefully he can get back to where he was. I know it takes guys like Saquon Barkley, took him a couple of years to get himself back, but he did.
Yep.
So hopefully Breece Hall can do the same thing, where he can, you know, get back to where he was. So, but Garrett Wilson, I mean, you know, he's probably better than any receiver Rodgers has had in a long time. So,
all the Jets receivers are, absolutely.
Yeah. So I hope so. Hopefully that gets him over. But by the time people listen to this, it's probably gonna get squashed already, and I'll just sound like an idiot. But
I guess we'll see. We'll see. This is coming out pretty quick from when you and I are talking. So,
But news breaks quick too.
News cycle changes. Well, thank you for that insight, and I always keep you in mind every Sunday when I'm watching Red Zone and I see the Jets, and I'm thinking, either Nick is happy or Nick is not happy. So
it's usually the latter, but that's okay. Yeah.
Well, a couple more things. One, I asked you before we started recording, you'll be at Texpo this year, correct? And you're speaking at that event. Excited about going to the great state of Texas?
Yeah. We've been there quite a bit the last several years, and Texpo is always a really good show. I'll be speaking. I'll be doing like a sort of economic industry update, and then focus a little bit more on that region as well. And it's always a good time. And I usually kick off the all the seminars with mine first.
Yep.
Kind of gives everybody a lay of the land to get an idea of you know, what the market's looking like. So when they go into their discussions with their their partners and clients and things like that, they have a little bit of background. So I'm looking forward to that.
Yep. Yeah, it's May 11th and 12th in San Antonio. Texas Glass Association does a great job. Key Media puts the show on. It's a great, wonderful show. One of my favorites. And I love the great state of Texas. So it'll be awesome to be able to see you down there. So very cool.
Yeah, I love San Antonio for sure.
Great location. So tell me, I probably screwed it up along the way. How can people get your newsletter? And it comes in, it's called Quarterly Review, because you do put it out four times a year. Can you give kind of the people how to get it and when it comes out, when the releases are?
Sure. Yeah. If you just go to, you can go to research.keymediaresearch.com, or you can just go to keymediaresearch.com and find the research tab. You'll be able to find your way to get the report, or you can email me directly at nstdennis@glass.com. And that's a good way to get on the list as well. And what we do is we put together a quarterly report that just reviews the last quarter and talks about, what we saw in terms of glass and glazing spending and what we project ahead. Then we've also got our annual glass and glazing industry outlook report, that'll be available within the next couple of weeks.
Wonderful.
And then other than that, just stay tuned. We have a lot of exciting things that I, can't really get to yet because we're still working on them, but there's going to be a lot of exciting things in 2023 we're going to be doing. So I look forward to announcing all that.
Yeah. Thanks for reminding me on the report, because that usually does come out, sometime in February-ish. So
Yeah. Usually first half of the first quarter of the year is when we have all the data. So, yep.
Wonderful. Well, I look forward to checking that out again this year, because it's a great piece. And thank you. I've had Nick St. Dennis, from the Director of Research at KMR, Key Media Research, does the Glass and Glazing Quarterly Review. Comes on now. You're a recurring guest, so you're coming down every year at this time. We plan on, as long as you want to, it'd be great to have you on and talk about the year. Thank you for your time today and the insight.
Thanks, Max. I appreciate it.
Okay. That will wrap up the guest portion of the From the Fabricator podcast. Thank you to everyone, Katie, Christy, Nathan, Adam, and Nick. Thank you so much for being on the podcast. Thank you also to myglassclass.com for the support of this podcast. If you want to get your people trained and trained correctly, go to myglassclass.com. Check it out. 100 courses plus available, always being updated from the best of the best of the National Glass Association and our industry. Please check it out, myglassclass.com. Of course, before I leave, got to give you my TV thoughts. This one from John Corf of Virginia Glass told me to check out The Recruit on Netflix. Not bad. Kind of interesting. I'm into it. So Mr. Corf, I appreciate the the heads up on that one. Big goings on in Virginia lately too. If you're following the news, they're doing some really exciting things. But The Recruit is something to check out on Netflix. And the one I just finished with the second season coming up actually in March is called Yellow Jackets, and it's a little older. I think it came out in 2020 or 2019, maybe, you know, somewhere around there. Got caught up in the whole COVID adventure, kind of Lord of the Flies set now in current age. It may not be for everyone, but the writing and the acting and the way the scripts come together are fantastic. Really, really wonderful show. Yellow Jackets, that one's on Paramount Plus with a second season actually coming up in March. So if you watch it now, you'll probably time it perfectly to the new season. So that wraps everything up for this month. We will see you here in a few weeks with another podcast coming out around the same time as BEC. I hope to see everybody at BEC. If you haven't signed up, do that now at glass.org and check out the events. But again, thank you so much for listening. Thank you for the support, and we will see you later.
Oh, the music is stopped.